Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, May 19th, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of Luke. And we'll be reading tonight chapter 6, Gospel of Luke, chapter 6, read by Alexander Swaby. Okay.
Chapter 6. And it came to pass on the second Sabbath after the first that he went through the cornfields, and his disciples plucked the ears of corn, and did eat, rubbing them in their hands. And certain of the Pharisees said unto them, Why do ye that which is not lawful to do on the Sabbath days? And Jesus answering them said, Have ye not read so much as this, what David did, when himself was an hungered, and they which were with him? How he went into the house of God, and did take and eat the showbread, and gave also to them that were with him, which it is not lawful to eat, but for the priests alone. And he said unto them, That the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. And it came to pass also on another Sabbath, that he entered into the synagogue and taught, and there was a man whose right hand was withered. And the scribes and Pharisees watched him, whether he would heal on the Sabbath day, that they might find an accusation against him. But he knew their thoughts, and said to the man which had the withered hand, Rise up, and stand forth in the midst. And he arose and stood forth. Then said Jesus unto them, I will ask you one thing. Is it lawful on the Sabbath days to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy it? And looking round about upon them all, he said unto the man, Stretch forth thy hand. And he did so, and his hand was restored, whole as the other. And they were filled with madness and communed one with another what they might do to Jesus. And it came to pass in those days that he went out into a mountain to pray, and continued all night in prayer to God. And when it was day, he called unto him his disciples, and of them he chose 12, whom also he named apostles, Simon, whom he also named Peter, and Andrew his brother, James and John, Philip and Bartholomew, Matthew and Thomas, James the son of Alphaeus, and Simon called Zelotes, and Judas the brother of James, and Judas Iscariot, which also was the traitor. And he came down with them and stood in the plain, in the company of his disciples, and a great multitude of people out of all Judea and Jerusalem, and from the sea coast of Tyre and Sidon, which came to hear him, and to be healed of their diseases, and they that were vexed with unclean spirits, and they were healed. And the whole multitude sought to touch him, for there went virtue out of him, and healed them all. And he lifted up his eyes on his disciples, and said, Blessed be ye poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are ye that hunger now, for ye shall be filled. Blessed are ye that weep now, for ye shall laugh. Blessed are ye when men shall hate you, and when they shall separate you from their company, and shall reproach you, and cast out your name as evil for the Son of Man's sake. Rejoice ye in that day, and leap for joy. For behold, your reward is great in heaven. For in the like manner did their fathers unto the prophets. But woe unto you that are rich, for ye have received your consolation. Woe unto you that are full, for ye shall hunger. Woe unto you that laugh now, for ye shall mourn and weep. Woe unto you when all men shall speak well of you, for so did their fathers to the false prophets. But I say unto you which hear, love your enemies. Do good to them which hate you. Bless them that curse you, and pray for them which despitefully use you. And unto him that smiteth thee on the one cheek, offer also the other. And him that taketh away thy cloak, forbid not to take thy coat also. Give to every man that asketh of thee. And of him that taketh away thy goods, ask them not again. And as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. For if ye love them which love you, what thank have ye? For sinners also love those that love them. And if ye do good to them which do good to you, what thank have ye? For sinners also do even the same. And if ye lend to them of whom ye hope to receive, what thank have ye? For sinners also lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love ye your enemies, and do good, and lend, hoping for nothing again. And your reward shall be great, and ye shall be the children of the Highest. For he is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. Be ye therefore merciful, as your Father also is merciful. Judge not, and ye shall not be judged. Condemn not, and ye shall not be condemned. Forgive, and ye shall be forgiven. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down and shaken together and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that ye meet withal, it shall be measured to you again. And he spake a parable to them. Can the blind lead the blind? Shall they not both fall into the ditch? The disciple is not above his master, but every one that is perfect shall be as his master. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but perceivest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Either how canst thou say to thy brother, Brother, let me pull out the mote that is in thine eye, when thou thyself beholdest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, cast out first the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to pull out the mote that is in thy brother's eye. For a good tree bringeth not forth corrupt fruit, neither doth a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. For every tree is known by his own fruit. For of thorns men do not gather figs, nor of a bramble bush gather they grapes. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. For of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh. And why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show you to whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock. But he that heareth and doeth not is like a man that without a foundation built an house upon the earth, against which the stream did beat vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions tonight? Any announcements?
Well, John, I do not have any questions for this week. I've been having trouble with my email for the last 2 days. That may be part of the issue, but I got some emails as late as 6 o'clock, but no questions. So we'll have to go without questions. If any come in, we'll just go to them next week.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, I'm going to open the queue now, and but tonight we're going to focus on... Give me a second here. Tonight we're going to focus in on our paper going out to the United States Supreme Court. This is the first time I'm reading it out loud. I've read through it a few times. I think it's in good shape. But again, when you read it out loud, that's when you really pick up the errors, and we'll hopefully fix those errors as we go along. So let's start off. Let me see. But if I have these papers open, I guess I don't. Let me open these papers up. Yeah.
John, it would help if you turned the volume up just a little bit, please.
I'm sorry, my volume?
Yeah, your volume. I can barely hear you. I can hear you, but I If you're going to read this, I want to hear it.
Okay. Anybody else? How am I coming through to anyone else? Because I'm not sure how I'd be able to turn my volume up.
Yeah. Fine to me, John.
Yeah, maybe on your side. And Ed's coming in like Donald Duck. Anybody else not hearing me very well, or is it just Terry?
You sound good to me.
Okay, I guess it's your side, Terry, because there's nothing
right,
I can do.
Thank you.
And I'll try to talk a little loud anyway. Okay, so anyway, we have this paper going in. I was able to purchase all the necessary books. We got about 45 or 46 books going out, government by consent. I also have a few other books that I'm going to give to certain individuals. One of them is Memorandums of Common Law. That particular book I wrote for the sole purpose. A lot of those memorandums are in Government by Consent book. But this book, Memorandums of Common Law, I put together for the specific reason to really just address each of the problems that we really have that needs to be fixed in order to bring our government back under the will of the people. And I think there's about, I don't remember how many. I think it's 27 memorandums, I think. I know we have more memorandums in this book of memorandums than we do in the Government by Consent book. And also, they've been updated, of course. You know, every once in a while I read through them and I update them, especially if I'm going to publish something. A few people I'm going to send that book to also, that's in the list. So of course, everybody in Trump's administration is going to get a copy of the book and a copy of this paper. And of course, President Trump will get a copy. And we're sending it to the Supreme Court from the perspective of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury dealing with really treason, a national emergency. So I'm hoping to send that out this week. I did date it, but, you know, I dated it in red because I don't know that it's going to go out on that day. Right now, we're short about $500 that we'll need to do the mailing. You know, we're going to be filing this without paying anything. We'll see where that goes. We did send a presentment to the United States Supreme Court before, they did not return it, and we sent it without money. We don't have any intentions in paying, but if we have to get this before them, we will, because we want them to do one of two things, look at the paper and deny it, or look at the paper and do something about it. Denial will cause, I think at this point, we really got to seriously start thinking about doing indictments on the United States Supreme Court, because this is serious. They've closed our courts of justice. They've been closed for quite some time, since 1938. Probably longer than that anyway. Maybe even a little less from the standpoint that things might have continued under common law for a while before it sort of acclimated all the way through the entire federal district courts and down into the state courts. And so our courts of justice have been closed down. So this is a one-pager. It's called File on Demand Under Penalty of Law. And it is focusing in on USC subsection 2382 and 2381. It's a disclosure of treason, a national emergency, and it goes, attention, the clerk. You are directed to file the attached document unimpeded as required by law without charge. You are commanded to deliver a true copy to all judges and mail a timestamp copy of the front page of the attached document to the address above. We the people do not pay money for justice or to exercise our First Amendment right. That would be extortion. Authority. We the people of the United States, in order to establish justice, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. The preamble. The U.S. Supreme Court in Hale versus Henkel, U.S. 43, ruled that plaintiff should not be charged fees or costs for the lawful and constitutional right to petition this court in this manner in which he is entitled to relief, as it appears that the filing fee rule was originally implemented for fictions and subjects of the state and should not be applied to the plaintiff, who is a natural individual and entitled to relief. In Marbury v. Madison, Chief Justice Marshall stated, the very essence of civil liberty certainly consist in the right of every individual to claim the protection of the laws whenever he receives an injury. One of the first duties of government is to afford that protection. The U.S. Supreme Court in Crandall v. Nevada ruled that a natural man or woman is entitled to relief for free access to its judicial tribunals and public offices in every state of the Union. And, of course, we've got some footnotes. Okay, so that is the file and demand. Let me get another page. Okay, and then we had the brief. And we have one exhibit that's going to be attached to this. Matter of fact, let's look at the exhibit first. This exhibit's going to be attached. This is the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure that merged equity and common law. This is found on the federaljudicialcenter.gov website. So it's their website. And they said concerning this, the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure merged equity and common law. This was on September 16th, 1938. And this was the total destruction of our courts from this point forward. In 1938, pursuant to its authority under the Rules Enabling Act of 1934, which in itself was subversion, the legislature has no power or no authority to empower any other of the parts of our government, the branches of government, any power, nor can they take away any of their power. But they did what they wanted to do anyway. So this was subversion. The Supreme Court enacted uniform rules of procedure for the federal courts. Among the changes wrought by the rules was the eliminating of the federal court's separate jurisdictions over suits in equity, the century old system of English jurisprudence in which judges based decisions on general principles of fairness in situations where rigid applications of common law rules would have brought about injustice. That's an amazing statement. Under the new rules, suits in equity and suits of common law will group together under the term civil action. Okay, so that totally destroyed our courts of justice. They don't exist no more. They haven't existed since 1938. So now the paper that we're putting together, we're calling it an extraordinary, and I may change a few things here, trying to get the right perspective to begin with. And again, we'll do some corrections as we go through this paper. Hopefully people will get this word out and maybe send people to our Rumble page, which will show at the end of this paper here where people can find that, so that they can hear about this paper that we're going to be filing with the United States Supreme Court. So this is an extraordinary presentment to the Supreme Court of the United States. It's from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, which is the Sureties of Peace, to the federal, against the federal judiciary. The United States Supreme Court has original jurisdiction. This is common law court of record. This is for a redress of grievances brief for we the people and unalienable rights secured by Amendment 1, First Amendment. Right now I got it dated for May 21st, but that is really, that date will depend on when I accumulate enough money to be able to send this out. Because when we mail it to the United States Supreme Court, we want to mail it to all these other individuals. Like I said, it's about 45 people, books and this paper. The extraordinary presentment. We the people ordained and established under Article 3, Section 2, that the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity. Whereas the 73rd Congress, without constitutional authority, in an act of treason, enacted the Rules Enabling Act of 1934. Allegedly given the United States Supreme Court power to adopt rules of procedure and evidence under 28 U.S.C. subsection 2072, an oxymoron between subsection 2072A and B, that in itself both abridged and modified the U.S. Constitution by seizing power to give power that they do not have the power to give, thereby abridging the will of the people who ordained common law and its rules in the Declaration of Independence, when we placed ourselves under the laws of nature and of nature's God. Whereas in the United States, sovereignty resides in people. The Congress cannot invoke the sovereign power of the people to override their will. Under said act, the Supreme Court enacted uniform rules of procedure for the federal courts. Under the new rules, suits of equity and suits of common law were grouped together under the term civil action, claiming that rigid application of common law brought about injustice. See Exhibit A attached. That's what we looked at in the beginning. Whereas in these repugnant acts, the Supreme Court abrogated the law of the land, replacing courts of justice with chancery courts, thereby trampling upon the Declaration of Independence, casting out nature's God, and by rule ordained judges king of both equity and law courts, under the will of man and not God. This compounded Congress's act of treason, forming a conspiracy between two branches of government to overthrow the will of the people, and thereby the government of the United States. Statement of the case. The damages done to the people and our judicial system by the aforesaid acts of the 73rd Congress and the U.S. Supreme Court is incalculable. This repugnant subversive act shredded the U.S. Constitution, the law of the land, and all state constitutions. Number one, it abrogated the law, laws of nature and of nature's God, the foundation of our founding documents, ordained in the Declaration of Independence. It abrogated the common law and replaced it with civil law. It abrogated our courts of justice, also known as courts of record, and replaced it with chancery courts. It abrogated the king of our courts, Jesus Christ, and replaced him with ALJs, that's administrative law judges. It abrogated free and independent grand and petit juries, placing them under the control and will of the administrative law judges and prosecutors. It abrogated the people's right of nullification. It abrogated the people's unalienable right and replaced it with civil rights. It abrogated the rules of common law in both law and equity courts, placing the people under administrative law judges' rules that are applied as law. It abrogated due process, placing the people under summary judgments by administrative law judges. It abrogated the will of the people and replaced it with the will of administrative law judges. It gave power to Congress and administrative law judges that are not vested by the people. It subjected the people to be liable to legislated commercial law. It gave power to administrative law judges to deny habeas corpus, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2. I should probably put the word protected. And by the way, as we go through this, if anybody sees an error, maybe get into the queue, make note of it, and try to make note of where about it is in the paper, and we'll try to make some corrections. Protected by Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2. It gave power to administrative law judges to deny full faith and credit in each state to public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every state. It gave power to ALJs, or administrative law judges, to deny a Republican form of government. It gave power to the administrative law judges to restrict free and independent juries via jury tampering. It gave power to administrative law judges to deny evidence. It gave power to administrative law judges to rule against our right to bear arms, purposed to protect us from you, protected by Amendment 2. It abrogated impartial juries, protected by Amendment 6. It gave power to administrative law judges to apply double jeopardy through hung juries, protected by Amendment 5. It gave power to administrative law judges to abridge religion and freedom of speech, protected by Amendment 1. It abrogated suits of common law, protected by Amendment 6. It abrogated suits of common law, protected by Amendment 7. I think I repeated that. Let me take a look. I'll make a note of this. I might have to reword that, because I got it twice. All right. Table of contents, the extraordinary presentment, statement of the case, table of contents, table of authorities, redress of grievances brief, which is consist of the original jurisdiction, standing, Supreme Court, the supreme sovereignty is in the people, authority of the unified United States common law grand jury, background of the common law in the colonies and the United States, the argument against the 1934 Rules Enabling Act, conclusion and order. And an attached exhibit, these are the table of authorities, the U.S. Constitution, the Bible, and various cases and statutes. Extraordinary presentment to the United States Supreme Court. Again, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, Surety of Peace against the Federal Judiciary. This is for redress of grievances. Brief for We the People, Unalienable Rights Secured by Amendment 1. Original Jurisdiction, Common Law Courts of Record. Original Jurisdiction, Black's Law. Jurisdiction is the first instance jurisdiction to take cognizance of a cause at its inception, to try it, pass judgment upon the law and facts, distinguished from appellate jurisdiction. The concept of original jurisdiction means that rather than a case coming to the court via other courts, state Supreme Court or federal appellate courts, the case begins at the Supreme Court. Article 3, Section 1, the judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. Section 2, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under the Constitution, the laws of the United States. The United States Supreme Court has original jurisdiction. This action at law is outside the jurisdiction of administrative law judges. Furthermore, the federal district courts are the target of this action for having shut the doors of justice via the repugnant Rules Enabling Act. Whereas judges have no more right to decline the exercise of jurisdiction which is given than to usurp that which is not given, the one or the other would be treason to the Constitution. And silence can only be equated with fraud where there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading. Standing, supreme sovereignty is in the people. The state cannot diminish the rights of the people. We the people have the supreme authority ordained by God in Genesis chapter 1, 26 through 30. We the people created and invested the U.S. Supreme Court, a fiction with limited powers. This action affects every sovereign person that has entered into the federal court since 1938, and presently every person that will enter into the federal courts in the future. We the people have ordained and established courts of justice, whereas the administrative law judges, via the Rules Enabling Act, have covertly seized control of the people's courts of justice, changing them into chancery courts, under the rules of men as they trample upon the rules of God. The doctrine of sovereign immunity is one of the common law immunities and defenses that are available to the sovereign. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign makes the law. The sovereignty of the state does not reside in the persons who fill the different departments of its government, but in the people from whom the government emanated, and they may change it at their discretion. Sovereignty, then, in this country abides with the constituency and not with the agent. And this remark is true both in reference to the federal and state government. At the Revolution, the sovereignty devolved on the people, and they are truly the sovereigns of the country. But they are sovereigns without subject, with none to govern but themselves. In the United States, sovereignty resides in people. The Congress cannot invoke the sovereign power of the people to override their will as thus declared. Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to law, for it is the author and source of law. But in our system, while sovereigns' powers are delegated to the agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains with the people, by whom and for whom all government exists and acts. And the law, Constitution, is the definition and limitation of power. The people of this state, as the successors of its former sovereign, are entitled to all the rights which formerly belonged to the king by his prerogative. A consequence of this prerogative is the legal ubiquity of the king. His majesty, Jesus Christ, in the eye of the law is always present in all his courts. Though he cannot personally distribute justice, his judges, which is the petit and grand juries, are the mirror by which the king's image is reflected. No authority can on any pretense whatsoever be exercised over the citizens of this state, but such as is or shall be derived from and granted by the people of this state. We, the people of the United States, ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America, the preamble. We, the people, vested the United States Supreme Court with judicial powers, Article 3, Section 1. Governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish and to institute new government. Declaration of Independence. Clearly all people of the United States have been injured and are in imminent danger and thereby have standing. The authority of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. The Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, a.k.a. Sureties of Peace. If anyone has been dispossessed without the legal judgment of his peers from his lands, castles, franchises, or from his right, we will immediately restore them to him. And if a dispute arises over this, then let it be decided by the 25 jurors, of whom mentioned is made below in the clause for securing the peace. Moreover, for all those possessions from which anyone has, without the lawful judgment of his peers, been deceased or removed by our government, we will immediately grant full justice therein. Magna Carta, paragraph 52. The Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is comprised of 50 grand juries, each unified among the counties within their respective states, that were overwhelmingly unified by reconstituting common law grand juries in all 3,133 United States counties. All 50 states have unified nationally as an assembly of thousands of people in the name of We the People to suppress through our courts the justice, courts of justice subverts both foreign and domestic, acting under the color of law within our governments. We are the people, and this grand jury will remain in session until we secure our nation from the tyrants at large and reinstate our constitutional republic. I got to do a little repair on this paragraph because I didn't make the note that they came together to form the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, so I'll repair that later. But we the people have the unbridled right by law and in law to impanel our own grand juries and present true bills of information, indictments, and presentments to a court of record, which is then required to commence criminal proceedings. Our founding fathers with foresight grafted into the common law Fifth Amendment a buffer that we the people may rely upon for justice when public officials, including judges, that go rogue violating the law. 18 U.S.C. Code, subsection 2385. Whoever organizes or helps or attempts to organize any society, group, or assembly of persons who teach, advocate, or encourage the overthrow or destruction of any such government by force or violence, or becomes or is a member of or affiliates with any such society, group, or assembly of persons, knowing the purpose thereof, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 20 years or both. 18 U.S.C. Code, subsection 2, principles. A. Whoever commits an offense against the United States or aids, abets, counsels, commands, induces, or procures its commission is punishable as a principal. B. Whoever willfully causes an act to be done, which if it directly performed by him or another would be an offense against the United States, is punishable as a principal. Background of the common law in the colonies and the United States. There are only two fundamental traditions of law and governments that are active among humanity, each manifesting contrary ideals: the common law and the civil law. The common law rests upon justice administered by scriptural principles that presupposes and guard against the inherent imperfections of human reason. The civil law, on the other hand, justifies its method by presupposing and appealing to man's notions of perfected reason. The common law tradition governs only a handful of countries and is fundamentally consonant with scriptures. Let me see if I'm pronouncing consonant, yeah, with scriptures. Acknowledged by divine eternality of law as the measure of all things. The civil law tradition, on the other hand, governs most modern nations and is fundamentally Babylonian, trusting human reason as the worthy measure of all things. The common law tradition recognizes the necessity of human administrative law, or administration of law, and government while providing safeguards against man's weakness. There is a hidden hand that orchestrates events, our courts, and our legislation through the bar. America is in shambles, and our elected servants walk as blind men. There is a war that has been raging since antiquity, a war for our hearts and our minds, for our flesh and for our very souls, to bring all mankind under a one-world order. As George Washington put it, orchestrated by a small group of cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men who have subverted the power of the people and usurped for themselves the reins of government. They have put in place of the delegated will of the nation the will of a small but artful and enterprising minority to make the public administration the mirror of their ill-concerted and incongruous projects of faction, rather than the organ of consistent and wholesome plans digested by common councils and modified by mutual interests. Legislative laws, not to be confused with equity, government by rules of common law. Legislative laws of men change with times, serve the gender, serve governments, and are incapable of mercy and demoralize men. Whereas God's laws are the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. They serve God, serve man, benefit both victim and wrongdoer, provide for repentance, considers mercy, builds morals, and saves souls. The federal government is a fiction created by we the people, has no power, beyond what we gave, to destroy our law and our courts of justice, whereas we the sovereign people ordained and established a federal government to serve the following six directives. 1. Form a more perfect union. 2. Establish justice. 3. Ensure domestic tranquility. 4. Provide for the common defense. 5. Promote the general welfare. And 6. Secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Our Constitution provided for a government that united the states as one unique nation, where no state is deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. But insidious factions within all three branches of our government have conspired and have succeeded in depriving every state its equal suffrage, destroying all balance of power that we the people gave the states through the passing, as law, the repugnant 17th Amendment, a law specifically and explicitly forbidden by the Constitution itself. Article 5, no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. In 1775, colonial militiamen, also known as We the Sovereign People, took up arms against the British troops of the tyrant King George for subversion of the unalienable rights of We the Sovereign People. On July 4, 1776, We the Sovereign People in the Declaration of Independence dissolved the political bands with Britain, proclaiming, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal stations to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the cause which impel them to this separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among them is among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. In this proclamation, we the sovereign people laid the foundation of our Constitution, calling upon our Creator, acknowledging the covenant with God by establishing the law of the land, that is, the common law that the Bill of Rights expresses. The acknowledgement of this covenant with God under his law was made clear by the Committee of Three, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, and Benjamin Franklin, that were chosen to author our founding documents and declaration, our founding document, the Declaration of Independence, in 1776. This same committee of three was again chosen by the Continental Congress to work on and submit a national seal designed for approval. Jefferson, in his representation of the law of the land and our structure of government, designed an illustration of the Israelites' exodus out of slavery and bondage from Egypt. Benjamin Franklin had an idea similar to Jefferson and wanted also to illustrate a scene from Exodus of the Israelites. The scene would show Moses parting the Red Sea, with Pharaoh and his chariots being overwhelmed by the waters, with the motto, "Rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God." Thomas Jefferson became so enamored with this motto that he incorporated it into his own personal seal design. In 1782, Congress sadly rejected the Jefferson and Franklin design and instead adopted a two-sided seal designed by Charles Thompson. His seal gave allegiance to a secret society that symbolically made the point within the seal that there was already a conspiracy to supplant the laws of nature's God, of nature and of nature's God, replacing it with civil law of men under a new world order. Franklin was not happy with the eagle, as he explained in a letter to his daughter. "For my own part, I wish the bald eagle had not been chosen as the representative of our country. He is a bird of bad moral character. He does not get his living honestly. You may have seen him perched on some dead tree near the river, where too lazy to fish for himself, he watches the labor of the fishing hawk. And when that diligent bird has at length taken a fish, the bald eagle pursues him and takes it from him." In 1789, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, did ordain and establish the Constitution for the United States of America. In 1791, we the people of the United States expressed the desire, in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and as extending the ground of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent end of its institution, resolving that this Bill of Rights to be valid to all intents and purposes as part of the said Constitution. The Bill of Rights, thereby being the capstone of our Constitution, laid the foundation of our unalienable rights that expressed the blessings of common law, by which all law is measured, in that all laws repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. Marbury versus Madison. Therefore, by we the people calling upon God in 1776, desiring the righteousness of his law, seeking the blessings of his liberty, entered into an everlasting covenant with him that no man can depose. God put his laws into our minds and wrote them in our hearts, and he shall judge the world in righteousness. He shall administer judgment to the people in honor. Therein the common law. God decreed concerning those who would attempt to unseat him and overthrow his covenant and bind his people in a statutory bondage, saying, "It shall come to pass that Jehovah will give his people rest from their sorrows and from their fears and from the hard bondage wherein they were forced to serve." Leviathan. "They will not rise and possess the land, nor fill the face of the world with their dark cities." And that he would rise up against them at the world's darkest moment and sweep the children of iniquity with the broom of destruction. "Of that day, the Lord said, surely as I have thought, so shall it come to pass. And as I have purposed, so shall it stand. In that day, Jehovah, with his sore and great and strong sword, will punish Leviathan, the piercing serpent, even Leviathan, that crooked servant and serpent, and slay the dragon that is in the world. Therefore, in that day, we the sovereign people will reestablish the law of the land, and God will execute his judgment upon all who offend. That day of judgment has commenced through a type of Cyrus and his administration." In 1878, 75 lawyers from 20 states and the District of Columbia met in Saratoga Springs, New York, to establish the American Bar Association, a necessity for paving the way to establish the New World Order of Ages. Since that first meeting, the ABA has worked in the shadows, infiltrating and covertly altering our government, our courts, our churches, our institutions, and our media, and demoralizing our children, all in an effort to expunge our common law and replace it with civil law, also known as Babylonian law, Justinian law, or Roman law. Today, with about 500,000 bar members, many being unaware, blinded by greed, they have perverted the rule of law, deprived we, the sovereign people, of due process, and have supplanted our Article III courts of record with jurisdictions unknown. In 1934, at an act of treason, the 73rd Congress passed the Rules Enabling Act, enabling the United States Supreme Court, partaking in that act of treason, prescribed rules under 28 U.S.C. subsection 2072A that abrogated the common law. This was an attempt to destroy our covenant with our Creator, and thereby establish a totalitarian government unaccountable to we, the sovereign people, under foreign control, behind which the conspiratorial erosion of our courts and our Constitution began. Only we, the sovereign people, can ordain and establish laws and governments. Only we, the sovereign people, are endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights. Governments are not. Any court resting upon said act is a de facto court. Any judge acting under such fiction of law denies due process and is acting in excess of their judicial authority, in collusion under the color of law, thereby losing judicial immunity. Therefore, any judicial reliance upon said act is injudicious, an act of sedition, conspiracy to overthrow our republican form of government. Any clerk failing to file common law documents and open a court of justice enters into seditious conspiracy. 18 U.S.C. Subsection 2385, advocating the overthrow of the government, 2384, seditious conspiracy with a widespread mutilating, and 2071, failing to file. The argument against the 1934 Rules Enabling Act, Article 3, Subsection 2, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity. In 1934, the 73rd Congress, acting outside of their authority, as we the people ordained in Article 1, Section 8, in an act of sedition, passed the Rules Enabling Act, perpetrated by Congress, the American Bar Association, the United States Supreme Court, and the federal judiciary, which have poisoned every attorney in every court in America by replacing law and equity with civil law in 1938. Subsequently, together, said perpetrators did conspire and did overthrow the government of the United States of America by abrogating the people's courts of justice, turning them into a den of thieves. In violation of 18 U.S.C. 2383 and 2384, whereas the ABA, being the chief orchestrator, advocates, abets, advises, and teaches the duty, necessity, desirability of abrogating the law of the land to their minions of the New World Order, also known as bar attorneys, in violation of 18 U.S.C. 2385. This single treasonous act abrogated our courts of law, courts of equity, Declaration of Independence, the United States Constitution, and its capstone Bill of Rights. Esquires are unwittingly taught and convinced that we are under Roman law and a democracy fashioned under Rome through outcome-based education, and having no prior proper K-12 education, they also through an outcome-based education receive the lie and are transformed into the minions of the New World Order, and thereby covertly changed our republic in the minds of the people to a democracy, and our courts from common law courts to chancery courts. Their belief in what they've been taught is so strongly embedded into their minds that they are blinded by the truth being, we are a common law constitutional republic fashioned under Israel and the Bible, and that we, the people being sovereign, ordained the law. These esquires enslaved we, the people, via statutory prison constructed under Roman law, which was fashioned under Babylonian law. The destruction of our republic required an army of well-trained minions working diligently for the New World Order. They accomplished this by opening bar schools and over time convinced the people, little by little, that we are under civil law and not common law. This was initiated when the King of England sent swarms of esquires in 1750, when we were the 13 colonies, to change our courts of justice under God's law into chancery courts under the laws of men. This was solidified in 1938 when the bar steered the United States Supreme Court under the supposed authority of the Rules Enabling Act, established the bar written federal rules of civil and criminal procedures. And you know, I should make that clearer there, because there is two of them, one's civil and one's criminal. So, and the states seared by the insidious bar followed suits, thus replacing common law with civil law throughout America. Said conspirators have levied war against the Constitution, and thereby we the people. They have given aid and comfort to the enemy within the United States and elsewhere. They have concealed a conspiracy to destroy our republic. They have engaged in actions to subvert the government of the United States. They have conspired to conceal natural law, also known as the law of the land. They have, in congruence with the teaching of the American Bar Association, the National Lawyers Guild, the American Civil Liberties Union, the National Lawyers Association, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and many other anti-constitutional associations, knowingly and willfully advocate, abet, advise, and teach that natural law, and thereby the law of the land, has been abrogated, and thus have conspired to overthrow our republic. Under the ABA's Rules Enabling Act of 1934, the 73rd Congress allegedly enabled the United States Court the authority to prescribe rules under 28 U.S.C. 2072. The United States Supreme Court and the federal judiciary have covertly abused that authority to conceal and abridge the supreme law of the land under Federal Rule 2. According to the Federal Judiciary Center, a government agency, on September 16, 1938, pursuant to its de facto authority under the repugnant Rules Enabling Act of 1934, via Rule 2, stated that the Supreme Court enacted uniform rules of procedure for the federal courts. Under the new rules, suits in equity and suits in common law were grouped together under the term civil action, claiming that rigid application of common law rules brought about injustice. This was an act of treason, whereas any judge who does not comply with his oath to the Constitution of the United States wars against that Constitution and engages in acts in violation of the supreme law of the land. The judge is engaged in acts of treason. Cooper versus Aaron. The ABA judiciary's dark reasoning for abolishing common law became common law is because they claim that a rigid application of common law rules, also known as God's self-evident truths, maxims, brought about injustice. This is absurd, considering that God is good, just, and merciful, and they are not. And I think I might have repeated that before, but I'll look into that and see. And therefore it follows that his laws is just and merciful, while the hearts of men are desperately wicked. Who could know it? The truth of the matter is that common law sheds light on the ABA judiciary's dark deeds, thereby revealing their true intentions. Their claims that common law rules brought about injustice was an act of deflection, whereas their civil law rules brought about injustice. This seditious act, under the teaching and guidance of the Subversive American Bar Association and the aforesaid anti-constitutional associations, executed a silent coup by claiming the abrogation of the common law, with its unalienable rights that were endowed by our Creator, and covertly substituted them with civil rights legislated by lawless men. The ABA Federal Judiciary Center, proceeding under the de facto authority of 28 U.S.C. 620, claimed their purpose is to further the development and adoption of improved judicial administration in the courts of the United States. One of the center's main functions is to educate and train personnel of the judicial branch of the government, including but not limited to judges, magistrates, clerks, and courts, probation officers, lawyers, and persons serving as mediators and arbitrators. Plus, presently, the center's governing board is chaired by Chief Justice of the United States, John G. Roberts, Jr. As per Black's law, law derives from precedents, legislation, or custom under three categories. Common law, subject to natural law, written by nature's God in his word and the hearts of men. Equity, under our Constitution, is subject to the Constitution written by the people, by the authority vested in them by nature's God via the Declaration of Independence, which was a covenant with God and therefore cannot be broken but by his wrath. Civil law is subject to the state. Any law subject to the Constitution written by the state is civil law and not equity, written by men whose conscience is seared. The Constitution defines the law of the land as common law and equity. As the supreme law of the land, whereas the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or the laws of any state which includes rules, to the contrary notwithstanding. It appears the judges who are expected to know the law need to be instructed in the law, or are guilty of high treason, under 18 U.S.C. 2881. Whereas Congress alone was empowered under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18, to write laws in equity compatible with the rules of common law, Congress does not possess the power to abrogate natural law. That jurisdiction belongs to God alone, whereas ABA indoctrinated judges think they can change God's law. They think that they are above God, that they can just change our natural law to civil law, which places the people under their merciless, destructive jurisdiction of Leviathan. This action is a very definition of a coup, and the said defendants are thereby, or therefore, guilty of treason. Until we, the people, take back our stolen republic by reinstating law and equity in our courts, there will be no justice in American courts. And America would be lost, least to until the people rise to end it. James Madison said, "The people have the indubitable, unalienable, and indefeasible right to reform or change their government whenever it be found adverse or inadequate to the purpose of this institution." We, the people, agreed and codified this right in the preamble of the Declaration of Independence when we declared, "Whenever any form of government becomes destructive to our rights, it is the right of the people to alter government and institute new servants." We, the people, have the unalienable right to be free, to have access to the courts, our courts of justice, and to have government by consent. As Samuel Adams said, "The natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth, and not to be under the will or legislative authority of men, but only to have the law of nature for his rule." The Rules Enabling Act violates the people's unalienable right to common law rules in common law courts of record, as we read in Amendment 7. In suits at common law, where the value of the controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Conclusion and order. We, the sureties of the peace, on behalf of all the sovereign people of the United States, command the United States Supreme Court to obey the law of the land and declare the following findings to force all courts to open our courts of record. Nullify 28 U.S.C. subsection 2072. Nullify federal rules of criminal and civil procedure. Nullify the federal rules of evidence. Nullify chancery courts. Reinstate the rules of common law for courts of record. Reinstate the rules of common law for equity courts. Open our courts of justice, also known as courts of records. Summary judgment in a court of record are null and void. Proof of jurisdiction must appear on the record. Respectively submitted, Grand Jury Foreman, Sureties of Peace. I dated this for May 21st. Today's the 19th. So I'm kind of hoping to get it out by Wednesday, but that only will happen if I can gather together about $500 in order to do the mailing on this. We've collected some money over the past. We haven't collected that much, but we have collected enough at least to get started, to get the books. I purchased some more paper, some more toner, and also the necessary packaging. We just now need to get money together to pay for the actual mailing itself to 45 individuals, which will include books And of course, this paper, a cover paper, the letter to each of these individuals. I might make a few of these letters a little different to different individuals, but generally there's a generic letter being attached to this for most of the people that will be copied in this paper. Okay, so that brings us to the end of this paper we're looking at. And again, I'm hoping to hear people's thoughts and ideas, corrections, or anything maybe we might want to add to this paper that I might have missed. Maybe if there's some redundancy in this paper as I read it. You know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to clean this up a little more, and I'm going to post it tomorrow sometime up on our Monday night. Not on the Monday night call. Right here on the front page. I think I'm going to post it. Let's see. I'll probably post it right under here, right under the presentment to the President Trump and Attorney General Bondi. I'll post it up here. It'll be written up as a draft. And then once we are finally concluded, any corrections or anything that we need to add to this or corrections to be made, then I'll post it up as an actual pay. And we get enough money to do the mailing. Then I will post it as the actual paper going to the United States Supreme Court. So anyway, by posting it here, people have the opportunity tomorrow, the next day, or whatever, to take a look at it, give some more thoughts, ideas, send some ideas to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Again, that's mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. So any corrections or any additions that they can offer, we're going to consider and do whatever has to be done. I guess we'll take it from there. So again, we're going to get this paper out hopefully this week. Hopefully we'll get enough money together to finish off this project and see where we go from there. Okay, with that, I don't know if anybody's in the queue. Let me take a quick look. Okay, we've got one person in the queue, so anybody else wants to get into the queue, we now have two. But to get into the queue, if you're on a phone, it's a *6 and a 1. Or if you have an app or a browser coming in on app or browser, there should be a button there to push to get into the queue. But before we go into the queue, first we'll ask all of the leadership here if they have any thoughts or ideas or corrections that they can offer, and then we'll go to questions in the queue. If nobody has anything, we'll just go to questions in the queue. Okay. Nobody's picking up that mic, so let's do that. Okay, so we'll take our first person in the queue. I'm going to work my way over there. We now have three people. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? Again, *6 and a 1 phone, button, app, or browser. Jeff from PA, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. This is Jeff from Pennsylvania. Yeah, hey, I emailed a comment question last Monday, and it got sent back again. It's pretty lengthy, and I understand why. I just wanted some web links to be read off of it if it would be possible. I could either read them off, or if you want me to send them to you, and if you would like to post them up on National Liberty Lines for people to visit, either way.
What is it that you have? I missed the first part because I went to the other side of my office and get something to drink in my refrigerator. But what is the first part of what you were saying? You have some links and some information that you potentially want to ask if we can post them?
Yeah, or if you wanted me to read them off on the phone and send them on here now to keep it kind of succinct. I mean, it was a pretty lengthy summary I sent with the email, web links last week.
I started looking at some of that, Jen. Brought it to my attention, I believe, and I was looking at some of that stuff.
Yeah, he suggested I call in and verbally, relay it to.
Yeah, there were a few things in there that's inconsistent to, our positioning and thinking. You know, one of the things that I remember offhand was citizen. You know, we don't really need to do anything with our being a citizen of the United States or a citizen of the whatever state you're in. The Constitution used the word citizen several times, and of course they play games with it, and they play games also with a double interpretation of the, goodness, what was it, the 14th Amendment. And but the 14th Amendment was written specifically for slaves to bring them into the Union. But they did word it a little strangely that it could be, you know, and they have interpreted it differently. They, you know, people come to this country and a child is born and they call them a citizen. And nowhere in history have we seen that. No other nation has done that. We had never done it either. And but that 14th Amendment gave them the fodder in order to try to make that claim. Unless if it's properly interpreted, you know, the 14th Amendment is proper. But it, you know, the big problem is, you know, your founding fathers had the same problem. They didn't want to talk about slavery in the Constitution, so they kind of hid it, in you know, making certain statements in a certain way. And the 14th Amendment sort of does the same thing, which is at a later time, of course. But that 14th Amendment, that was still pretty early on, because I think it was 1865. But that 14th Amendment, again, is kind of hidden on its real purpose. The word slavery is not brought up in the Constitution. And by the way, our founding fathers never wanted slavery to continue. There would have been a breakup in the Union of the colonies, the 13 colonies, if they would have made a strong stance against the slavery, but they didn't want to break that Union. So they did, you know, word things in a certain way and took away certain potential monies and benefit that would come to the individuals who were counted as a slave. And they were confident that that eventually the slavery would be done away with. And of course, Lincoln felt that it was his job to do that, that was his calling, he felt. And he did make that change back then. But, and by the way, you know, just as a side note to this, just to make mention concerning Jefferson, Jefferson never bought or sold a slave in his entire life. He was absolutely against slavery. He just was born into that environment. He inherited the slaves from his father. And then when he married his wife, they had more slaves, so they had a lot of slaves. And he worked two times in legislation and once as a governor to try to end slavery, or at least in the beginning he knew he couldn't do it right away, so he started working towards emancipation. So he wanted to be able to free his slaves. But in Virginia, the only way you can deal with a slave is sell it or buy it, and that was it. So Jefferson refused to sell the slaves. So he gets a bad rap for this. And all our founding fathers get a bad rap for this. They were born into this environment. This is something Britain brought in. And they ended up being born into this. But they were dead set. They were in one accord at some point when they educated themselves, Jefferson and Madison being the major educators. You know, they came to that point to realize that slavery, we got to get rid of it. It can't be part of who we are as a people. And so they, you know, they didn't allow the word to be in the Constitution. They kind of hid it. And you know, so anyway, that's a couple of things. So I'll go through the stuff and see once if there's some things that we can post and some things that we might be in conflict with, of course, when we won't post. And we'll just take it from there. You know, we're all in I just want to say that we're all in different places educational-wise. You know, I know in my life, as time goes on, I change my mind from time to time because I get more information, I get more understanding of something, and then I come to a certain realization and make a change in mind. And we need to be changing and growing all the time. So, you know, because we have different opinions here or there, that should not separate us. We should struggle to really communicate and try to come to agreements through educating ourselves and digging a little deeper and finding out who we are as a people and so on and so forth. But back to you, Jeff.
No, I just wanted to offer my words of caution surrounding the 14th Amendment because you're right, it did pertain to slaves. And if one were to visit the Department of State's website, they specifically define U.S. citizen versus a national, not non-citizen national. A non-citizen national is defined as an American Samoan, which is, you know, an island under the federal territories. But the funny thing is American Samoa has never been incorporated out of all the other federal territories.
I don't know how that benefits us, though. You know, again, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? By allowing these people to change the meaning of things, to change the meaning of the Constitution concerning the word citizen, like I said, it's used seven times in the Constitution, to change the meaning of the 14th Amendment, that we have to give up what we know is true and change our thinking and try to do something else, I don't think we should do that. You know, we are all, every person that is a citizen, you know, born here, is a citizen of the United States. And that means you're a citizen of every state of the union. That's what it means. Not of the federal government. You're a citizen of every state of the union. And so therefore, you know, you just cross the line to go into Jersey from New York or to Connecticut from New York or to any other state anywhere. The moment you plant your feet on that other soil in that other state, you have all the rights of that you know, what you have for the Constitution, of course, and everything in that state, and the use of their courts and everything else, whether you live there or not. And you have, you know, if you decide to move there, you're immediately a citizen of that state. So the meaning of a citizen of the United States is not meaning citizen of the federal government of the United States. No, it's a citizen of all the states, and that's the point. And of course, you know, anybody that comes to this country and wants to become a citizen, they become a citizen of the United States. We gave that job and that authority to the legislators to write the law in order to have other people who come here to become citizens, who want to live here and be an American. And again, they're citizen of any state they sit in, that they live in, or any state that they walk into. So I think there's a lot of misconception about these things, and, you know, and I speak to myself first on this, too, because I had a lot of false thoughts, and I'm sure I still have some. You know, as life goes on, you get them corrected, and none of us ever come perfected, so, you know, when we're in eternity with the Lord, then we'll perfect it. Until then, you know, we're defective in many ways. Back to you.
No, that's why I think it's very important to emphasize the phrase United States of America. Because that does refer to the union.
Delineation.
Congress, just like in tax law, Title 26, Congress has the jurisdiction and the authority to redefine anything it wants, as long as it's in their jurisdiction, not everywhere, not in the 50 states everywhere. I tried to make that point across before. But in their jurisdiction, they can, and the courts have ruled, define anything they want, to redefine anything they want, but it has to remain in the confines of their jurisdiction. It's not overreaching. And we cannot continue to consent to that. And it has to do with, you know, it's contractual and it's consensual. And it's about opting out. And they can't force you into any contract or force you into any agreement. Because that would be fraud.
But remember, their jurisdiction, there's two jurisdictions. And the jurisdiction that really is in view here is not equity, but law. And that's the jurisdiction we're under, a natural law republic, republican form of government. But again, they played with words on that in that 14th Amendment. It's not, and again, you can read it either way. And they knew what they were doing because, again, this is the barristers who have done this. These are the minions of the New World Order. And the ones that are writing this stuff, they know exactly what they're doing and they understand it clearly. But most of these barristers, let's just take a number of 95%, maybe even higher than that. They're just believing what they're taught, and they don't know the difference, and they never understood the truth of who we are as a people and where our law comes from or any of those things. You know, they've been duped. But nevertheless, they've been led through and pulled along through lust, the lust of money, because lawyers just are way overpaid to begin with. And it's ridiculous the amount of money that one has to spend for justice. And that's why it's so important for people to know the law themselves and be able to defend themselves and articulate themselves in a court of law or at least be in control of your case if you do hire someone to assist you to talk on your behalf. Maybe you're just not a good talker, or whatever the case may be, but you need to take control of your case and understand, how things work, how due process works, you know. And that's why it's so important we need to teach our children in school, you know, not only who we are as a people, where we come from, and that we're a Christian nation, but also how the law works and what the law is. You know, our heritage is in the law, and our inheritance is liberty. So we need to know the law to understand our liberty. We need to know the law in order to know when they're breaking the law. And the law that we need to know is a very simple law. It's really common sense 101. That's it, with a sense of coming with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy from that kind of a mindset. That's pretty much it. Plus, of course, the Constitution, which is a very thin book, okay? And this is the powers and the authorities we gave to these people. We need to know what powers and authorities we gave to these people, so that when they step outside of that power and authority, that we hit them with the Constitution. We bind them back down, as Jefferson said, with the chains of the Constitution. So we all need to know this. It's so important to know American history, to know who we are as a people, where our heritage comes from, where our law comes from, what common law is, which really is from the heart. It's, you know, God said he wrote it in the hearts. It's that simple. We all know when a wrongdoing is done. You know, we know the Ten Commandments, which is basically the law. I mean, that's pretty much the whole thing, you know, is the Ten Commandments. And so we know when the law is being broken, and we also know how to fix that. We know how, we also know in our hearts how to restore that. You know, when 12 people come together and they say, okay, yeah, we're going to find this person guilty or whatever the case may be. Now, how are we going to restore the individual that they injured? And you debate that, talk about it, figure it out, and you come up with a conclusion, and that's the way it works. It's pretty simple, pretty simple and righteous and just. But back to you, Jeff.
No, John, that's fine. This is all about common law, and it's about returning to it. And I invite anybody to check this out, you know, starting with yourself, so with an open mind, and you can decide from there. And if it's something you would, endorse or, you know, agree with.
We'll go through it. And again, some of the stuff we already do agree with. You know, again, I haven't had time to scrutinize it strongly. I just haven't had the time. But I breezed through it, and there's certain things I saw where there was disagreements, and saw other things that there were agreements with. So, and again, isn't that the way of life anyway? You know. Life would be pretty boring if we all agreed on everything in one accord in this world, you know?
It's about choices. It's about, you know, it's voluntary. Like I mentioned, it's voluntary opting in, voluntary opting out. And this gentleman, Roger Sales, that most of the links are, you know, pertaining to, he's good friends with Brent Winters, and he's been on a few of his interviews. So I think you might find that enjoyable to watch, because both just their voices alone are very soothing and good radio voices. Good radio. You know, Brent, when he speaks well.
Yeah.
And Roger speaks well. He almost kind of sounds like Dave Ramsey if you've ever heard him talk. But I think you will find it enlightening.
Okay. Appreciate it.
Thank
All
you.
Right. Anything else, Jeff?
Yeah, that'd be fine. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Okay. We'll take our next caller. We only have two other people in the queue, and it's still a little early, so anybody wants to get into the queue, it's *6 and 1 if you're on a phone, and app or browser should be a button. Okay. Next caller. Ross, you got the mic. Go right ahead. How you doing, Ross? Ross, are you there? You got the mic. Okay, Ross must step away from his computer. I'm sure he'll get back in. We'll go to our next person. And again, the last person in the queue. Anybody wants to get into the queue, *6 and 1. Robert from Texas, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Yes, this is Bob in Texas. I guess you can hear me.
I can hear you.
Okay, great. Let's see. Thanks for the Jefferson thing. I didn't know about him not purchasing any slaves, but I do know like the first draft of the Declaration was all about getting rid of slavery. That was Jefferson's thing. And they, South Carolina and Georgia, made him get out the property part of it and remove all that in the first draft. But anyway, that's not why I called, but it's an important thing to remember, and I appreciate you letting us know about Jefferson never buying and his, you know, his family and what he married into. Anyway, let's see. I read at your, what is it, elected and public servant handbook, and I printed out 4 copies and put them into 3 ring binders because I've got a case in federal court on the Constitution and the right of free speech. And the lawyer that we have, he's fairly new, but before that, he is almost single-handedly responsible for the open carry laws in Texas. So anyway, there's a good chance I will see him tomorrow in another series of cases that a guy's been subjected to, like 21 different cases, and it's just a nightmare. But anyway, he's working with him on some of those. And so anyway, I'll be down there at the courtroom. I intend to give those 3 ring binders to the 2 other plaintiffs in this Constitution case in federal court, and to the lawyer, to make sure that we're on the same page on how I expect to proceed with this, you know, case. I contributed money about 2 years ago, and somehow I must have said I wanted to sign on. I thought I was going to be a witness, but anyway, it seems like I'm part of this federal case. And I would like, depending on this guy's reaction to your book, which I would hope you would get that printed, because I want to buy at least 12 copies to give broadly to people.
Are you talking about the elected and appointed servant handbook?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was just thinking about that. That's a book that I didn't publish. It's probably a good book that I should publish.
I can't put it down. And so I've been printing it out. I've had other things I've had to put it down, but I've read enough to know that I want at least 12 copies and maybe way more. Mm-hmm. So it would look, you know, so much more professional, you know, in a book.
Of course, yeah, I'll see about getting that up there. I mean, we don't charge much for the handbooks. I mean, you know, we could charge a lot less if I can buy them, you know, 50,000 at a time. We can sell them for dirt cheap, maybe $1 a piece or $2 a piece at that point, because the printing cost would be super low, and so on and so forth. But of course, going through Amazon, you know, and then you know, the cost factors there. And I think we make maybe $2 on a handbook, or $1.50. We don't make much at all. But I'm looking through the books, and I realize you're right. I didn't, and that'd probably be a good book, because it is something that people can give out to people who are running for office that they want to support, and give them the handbook, require them to read it, and have more conversation with them. But we do have some really good handbooks. We have the Common Law Handbook, which is pretty good, and Common Law Court Handbook is an excellent book also. They're really great handbooks, especially, you know, for going into the court.
Yeah. You know, those other named handbooks are not as specific as the, you know, the, and I'm having short-term memory problems. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, on the elected and appointed servant handbook.
The elected and appointed.
Yeah, each one has a different perspective. They have a lot of the same information, but a different perspective.
So. Yeah, but this one identifies who it's for.
Right.
So it's, you know, and I can easily give that to people that are already elected, you know, our sheriff, our deputies, you know, our chief deputies, and just let them know that this is our expectation. to me, when I finally got it and started and printed it out, my printer stopped a number of times. But anyway, once I got it working, it just seems like a dream come true. So anyway, I get euphoric on things, but it really does seem like a dream come true, and I'd like to see it pretty soon.
All right, yeah, I'll get that up in print form. And again, if people want it, they can get it for free also, like you did, just download it. And but I'll publish it and put it up there on the list with the rest of our books. So.
Yeah, no, that'd be great.
All right, anything else?
Is there some, like, where your website will be there in perpetuity if something happens to you? Because if that was gone,
yeah, no, it
might
just
be one of the biggest voids in my life.
Yeah, I was just talking to my wife a little bit about that, just in case, and so on and so forth. But we do have, you know, leadership here that I'm sure will continue things. We've got a lot of education. There's a couple of people who can speak, you know, and so it doesn't have to be just me. And Gerard, you know, is capable of speaking also. So things should go. I mean, it's a rich website, and it can continue. It will continue even in my demise. I'll try to make stronger, you know, security of that. I was just talking to my wife about that today. So I'm going to try to make a stronger security on that and try to make a plan. And I'll talk with some of the leadership here, get their thoughts and ideas and what they think and how we think. And, you know, one of the things is we've got some good people that are working with us, you know, in the national leadership. And but again, you know, as new people come in and maybe new leaders come in, we can start to decay a little bit. And we've got to be very careful of that. So maybe we can try to put something together and think about it on how we can be very protective so that we don't fall, you know, to the crazies, those madmen. But appreciate that point.
Yeah, I'm glad we're on the same page. One last thing, I always think of last things, but when I first signed up, it was more than, like, maybe it was 2 years ago or so. You know, I was given, you know, a list of maybe 12 or 14 people that were fairly, not all in my county, but most of them. And I called everyone, and I actually talked to two and had a good rapport with them. But like I do, you know, I put their number somewhere, and, I, you know, anyway, I would like to be able to recap, you know, those people that are most local so I can reach out to them, you know, maybe to come to things like this court hearing that's happening tomorrow, or commissioner's court that happens on you know, the Tuesday at 9:30. What I'm concerned about is, and the commissioner that I helped get elected, she was so upset when I saw her last Wednesday, and she just said she can't talk to me now because I had this case on free speech against the commissioner's court. Is that some? It seems like, you know, I'm the plaintiff, and I have the right to free speech, and so now I can't speak in a court that was formed basically by us with the Constitution and our trust that's meant to protect our free speech. So it just sounds like...
They're telling you you can't talk where?
In commissioner's court, because I like to address the commissioner's court.
So what exactly? I never heard of commissioner's court.
Well, they have different names. You know, they have parishes in Louisiana, and we have county commissioner's court.
And court established by the Texas Constitution?
I guess that's it. You know, they pay the sheriff. You know, the sheriff's elected. He runs the thing, but they actually have oversight of his budget and that kind of stuff.
What's the jurisdiction, though?
The what?
You know, what is the jurisdiction? You know,
is in every county, there's a judge. There's 254 counties and four districts, no matter the size of it. Maybe some of the small ones don't have it. I don't know. That's it as far as I know.
Sounds like a county court.
Yeah, county court. They call it commissioners.
Okay, so the county court. You know, here in New York, county court is established as a court of record. So it has both an equity side and has a law side.
No, they don't do any adjudication of anything. They just do the business of the county.
But nevertheless, you should be able to speak. Other people can speak, or just you to say because there's something going on with a lawsuit. What exactly is the point that they're making? That no one can speak, or just you because of some condition?
It's just me because I'm listed as a plaintiff on this federal lawsuit, and I've been through three different jurisdictions.
Well, that has nothing to do with the business at hand.
Well, okay. I've been through three jurisdictions. I've spoken more at the first two, and on this one, the judge just shuts us down on everything. He doesn't want to hear.
Is this the type of thing that runs like a court, or is this the type of thing where they discuss things and people come up to the podium and ask questions, or have discussion, or how is the, what's the setup like? You know.
Well, they've sort of made up their laws, because anyway. They have public participation in Texas Code. It's 551.007E, and you know it describes you know the 3 minutes and that the judge cannot, you know, he has to listen to criticisms that the you know he can't stop us from speaking if he doesn't. We're able to criticize the court and supposed to have our 3 minutes. And that our first two judges, that was the case. This one, he's been shutting everybody down. And one of the guys that could have been me, he got up one day and from the gallery, and there was a gal that she's been speaking all three administrations about a child that she has in jail who has special needs, medication problems, and just the conditions are horrific in the jail. And so she's always bringing that to the court because, you know, they built the jail, they funded the jail, and he shut her down. So anyway, this guy, you know, said, let her speak, let her speak, let her speak. And that could have been me 3 seconds later because I was ready to say the same thing. Anyway, he's been in and out of jail and had more than $1 million worth of bonds and a whole litany of charges that have been filed against him and his family for different things. And his father was a commissioner and his mother is the county clerk. So there's just retribution against the whole family. And there were 21 lawsuits filed against them, and he's spent already more than 6 months in jail for basically when he was jailed over the weekend, 3 days, got out on Monday afternoon, and anyway, so he filed a lawsuit against the judge, the bailiff, and the sheriff, and that's when all hell broke loose, and he ended up going to jail he's been in for at least 6 months. He's out now. But he's got another hearing tomorrow, jury selection at 9, trial start around 1 o'clock. And,
so again, I don't know what to call it. In other words, he was convicted in that court, in that county court,
there was no conviction whatsoever.
Yeah, but how did he get put in jail?
He was edicted, you know, to jail, and the fine for disrupting the court is $25. That he ended up.
Did he bring up habeas corpus? Did he challenge it?
No, nobody here knows anything, and it's kind of this lawyer that they're using is the one that evidently I signed up for without absolutely knowing.
Well, that's a perfect example of the fact that we need to have an education, that we need to know how to have government by consent. We need to know how due process works, how our court systems work. And it's not very complex at all, really. It's really quite simple. You know, it's not a complex.
The Declaration, you know, the laws of nature, nature's God. No human laws should be suffered to contradict these.
Exactly.
The right to life, liberty, property.
Yeah, that gets us to law, and law is very simple also. Law is simply common sense, working from the heart, though. I mean, look, we come with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, and you apply that which is righteous and just using common sense and build your case on maxims. It's really not difficult at all because you actually create it as you go, as far as the argument is concerned, because the facts is really what the case is all about, and you're just building the case around the facts and using logic. But as far as due process is concerned, that's pretty simple too, how the paperwork flows, discovery, and all the different things that go forward till you actually have the trial and how that works. So, again, people just kind of veer away from it because they fear it. It seems too overwhelming to them, but it really isn't. They just don't understand. If you're going to get into equity and you want to specialize in a certain thing, then, of course, it gets very complex. So you got to do a lot of memories of stuff, because you have codes. For instance, there in the federal level, there are 57 jurisdictions, okay, plus the law. So there's actually 50.
We don't want to do that. Yeah, I want to stick with what Blackstone wrote. And
right.
I think, essentially everything that he understood was what our founders learned and what they exercised when they were.
Right, but bear in mind, there are people making a living as a lawyer and specializing in certain areas. For instance, the people around the president, the president is governed by USC Title III. Okay, and goodness, there's like 800 to 1,000 pages of statutes and in that particular title alone, just Title III. Okay, but if you're going to be an advisor to the president, if that's the job you're seeking to get into, you have to know how that works. You have to know those laws and understand the powers and authority to be an advisor to the president, and the president has to have the confidence that and understand the law, because he's gonna operate off of what he's being taught or advised to. All that is good stuff. I mean, look at all of these all this equity stuff, all these codes and different regulations, the statutes. They have its place and they're important. They can't apply it upon us because that's man's law, and you can't apply that on people.
See, that's the thing. This is a freedom of speech constitutional case, and no statute should have no bearing on our God-given right, to protect ourselves. Natural law speech is one of the things we use to protect ourselves. The rights for life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and then First Amendment, being able to redress grievances. And if I lose my free speech because I filed a case for losing free speech, that seems to be even more egregious than, I can't, there's a possibility tomorrow that they won't let me in the building because I have a case against the county. And that seems like the most egregious,
Well, that definitely is against the law, no doubt about that. The denial of your right to participate, and it sounds like that really. What kind of things go on in that particular arena? Because you're calling it a county court on the one hand, but then it seems like something like the commissioners coming together, discovering or discussing. Processes and procedures or whatever the case may be. I mean, I'm confused still on that.
They have an agenda every week, and they go through 10 to 12, sometimes more, bullet points of.
It generally isn't run like a court. Then it's really just.
No, it's not a court at all. They don't. Nobody gets tried in that court. No lawyers present anything.
It's not a county court. So okay.
Well, it's a commissioner's court.
Yeah, well, but a county court has a certain jurisdiction. Okay.
Well,
if you wanted to go into the court and you're suing for something, if you're doing, for instance, small claims, that would be done in a county court. Okay, if it's something.
That's not this.
Okay.
This is just running the business of the county. But see, they do a lot of sneaky stuff, and it took me, you know, I've been doing it for like 14 years now, and it's so obvious when they're, you know, shoveling money to their buddies, or they're refusing to go with the machines. And then just recently, somehow I was sick and wasn't able to go to court, but they said they were going to change the lines on our precincts. We have like 72 precincts in my county, and there's only like 40 of them that you know, have anybody over each of those precincts. But anyway, they doubled the size of mine.
Do you know their codes and regulations that they operate by? Have you looked into that?
Well, I know what the intent of our founders was.
The thing is that they have to operate under certain regulations and codes. Okay, it's written, and if they violate that, it could be unlawful and even criminal.
Well,
and have you seen the video Edgar County Watchdogs? Edgar County Watchdog video. You're coming in on a cell phone. You don't see my desktop here, right?
Right. I'm just on a cell phone call.
Okay. Well, if you go to the page where you got the handbook that you were talking about that you downloaded, okay, and you come down the page underneath, you come down to memorandums. Well, you come down to tools to start a committee of safety. You got Microsoft Word. You got PowerPoint, and you got MP4 videos. Now, under MP4 videos, there's a link. It's a 13-minute video, okay? And basically,
you have
to, it's running right now for a second.
College, which gets 57 million.
Correct, by the standards of the law.
Okay, if you watch this video, okay, you're going to see there's a couple of lawyers that got together to go after these people that are running on different boards, and they're operating illegal and in secret, okay? And that is criminal. Okay, there are criminal situations. For instance, if they're operating in secret, if they have these secret meetings, it's criminal. And matter of fact, this particular, there's a couple of groups in here of different places where they actually had these people arrested. The sheriff came in and arrested them, and they videotaped all this stuff. And so what they've acted upon is this was lawyers who went in and they got a hold of the regulations or codes that they operate under, went through them and used that to apply against them, tell them they were breaking the law, they need to comply to the law. They rejected, refused, and brought the sheriff in, and they got arrested. Okay? And we the people can do that. That's one of the things we're trying to teach people through the committees of safety, and that's why it's so important, people who are creating committees of safety, that they get this proper education. You know, it's a wrongdoing to try to take power and authority and not understand their power and authority and the restrictions within their power and authority, and where you might be violating someone else's rights or injuring other people because you're operating in ignorance. And this is the way to have power and authority, government by consent, doing what these people did here on this video. So it's something you might want to get a chance to watch, okay? It's under MP4 videos. Edgar County Watchdog video. It's 13 minutes long.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'll do that. And they are ignorant. And the whole deal happened, I think it was our hired election administrator in her last, and I think she's the one that did it. You know, when I went to the elections administration, they said they were just going to move the lines a little bit. Well, they doubled the size of mine, and they're trying to get, they're really targeted to get rid of me because I'm the only one that raises, you know, hell with what the law is supposed to be. So they've doubled the size of my district, which makes it way out of proportion with the average precinct for voting in the United States. So it's supposed to be something like 3,000 residents, about 15,000, 17,000 voters, you know, on a presidential election. And now it's going to be 34, and it'll be over 6,000 residents. And say, I've been making, you know, heavy noises about elections and how it has to be, you know, like our founder said, the most minute district on election day, on paper, hand counted by the people in the precinct, and the precinct chair is the black robe election judge that day, and he's in charge of everything that happens in the precinct on election day. He gets the, you know, his neighbors, you know, to work on election day, and he trains them on what they have to do. But it just simplifies things and gets rid of machines, and it makes us way more confident in the results of our elections.
So, well, all these things you're talking about should be run by the people, and therein is the Committee of Safety. That is governed by consent, where the people take control.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to find out, you know, the people that have joined in L.A. that are in my, you know, that are closest to me. There was a list of like 12 or 14. And
well, look, if you go out to our page, you know, after nationallibertyalliance.org, and you come to, I'm trying to find it right now, if you come to our directory, okay, and you click on the directory, I'm sure you may already know this already.
Well, I don't, and I should. I wish we had a class on just how to navigate, you know.
This is simple. And again, you know, this is recorded, what we're doing. We have it in MP3, and we also put it up on video, so on our Rumble page. And we also on YouTube, but we don't get that many hits on YouTube. But Rumble's, you know, we get some hits. But you know, if you go out and under, just click on directory on the blue bar, and then you'll see the states, okay? And just click on, come down and click on Texas. Once you click on Texas, you'll see, for instance, we have 857 members in Texas. There are 254 counties, and we have constituted 248 of those 254. I don't know why I never saw that we were a little short on that, but in any event, now, you can see that there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 committees of safety in process in Texas, okay? Okay. Now, if you wanted to get, and what county are you in?
Smith.
What county are you in?
Smith.
Smith?
Yeah. Mr. Smith goes to Washington.
Smith. Okay. Yeah, there's no one that started a committee of safety in Smith County, but if you get a hold of Jan and, you know, just send it to mail at National Liberty Alliance and ask Jan for a list of people in your county and maybe a couple counties surrounding. I mean, we'll give you the people in the entire state if you want it, but you'll get phone numbers.
I want to keep it as local as I can get.
Let them know what county you want or counties if you want, you know, the counties around you, too. Request a list of those, all the people in those counties that are members, and Jan will get that to you.
Yeah. Okay. It's Jan, J-A-N?
Yeah, well, just send it to mail, M-A-I-L. Jan will see that.
Yeah.
National Liberty Alliance. Or you could send it to Jan at National Liberty Alliance, too.
Jan. Okay. Okay.
Okay, right. We're going to take our next call.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay. Okay, Ross, you're back. Go ahead. You got the mic. Ross, you got the mic. Go right ahead. You've been unmuted. We're not hearing if you're talking. You may be muted on your end. Ross. All right, there's nobody else in the queue, so I'll just leave you unmuted. Maybe you'll figure out the problem and start talking to us. Other than that, I don't know, anybody, any of our leadership have any thoughts, ideas, questions, or any thoughts about the paper we looked at tonight and, you know, get a little conversation on that. We got about 9 minutes before we close down. All right, meanwhile, let's see.
I do have something, John.
Go right ahead, Terry.
Well, I think it's too wide and too broad. I have been talking to an AI chat in DuckDuckGo, which is chat GPT-4o-mini. And it's got some very stupid things to say, of course. But I challenged it with the things that I have written. I cannot write the paper you wrote. And I cannot, I haven't written a paper yet, so I'm still trying to judge what I should write. And one of the things that I really dislike is that it reads, they shall take effect 6 months after the promulgation, and thereafter all laws in conflict therewith shall be of no further force or effect. Did that just nullify the Constitution?
Well, again, it seems a little out of context, so I don't know what the context is. Who wrote that? Is that AI who wrote that?
No, that's in the Act. That's the last sentence of Section 1.
Okay, and what Act is this? Is this the Rules and Enabling?
Sorry? Say that again. What's the question again?
Yeah, what Act are you talking about?
The Rules Enabling Act of 1934, okay. June 19th.
And read that again. So this is the very end of it. Read that again.
It's the very end of the first section. It goes on to Section 2.
Okay.
They is talking about said rules shall take effect 6 months after their promulgation, and thereafter all laws in conflict therewith shall be of no further force or effect. I think they just nullified the Constitution.
Well, no, ultimately they're nullifying whatever it is. It takes 6 months before it actually comes into law. I think that really is what they're saying. I'll have to go sit down and read that very carefully and get it to, you know, want to read a little before. Is there anything else after that? Or does it move?
It goes into Section 2. But the point is that it's comparing rules against laws. And so
well,
it's saying when
it does say in Rule 2 there, which is actually in the I think it's called Rule 2. No, actually it must be called something else. I just don't remember. But
Section 2.
Section 2 says that anything that's in conflict with the law, okay, therefore then that would be null and void, meaning the rule, if that's the one you're talking about, because I've read through that.
Okay. It doesn't say that.
Anything that is contrary to the Constitution or the law of the land, ultimately, which is words that I'm using, paraphrasing what they're trying to say.
Okay, it's the sentence before it will clarify. If I may read both sentences, the second to the last and the last sentence, can I do that?
Yeah.
Said rules shall neither abridge, enlarge, nor modify the substantive rights of any litigant. They shall take effect 6 months after their promulgation, and thereafter all laws in conflict therewith shall be no further force or effect. It was talking, they refers to the rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read through that. I'm looking for it right now. I just don't have it at my fingertips, so I'm looking for it. There it is here, rules. Okay, well, that's not it. That's just the code, the rulemaking power. Any rule prescribed by the court or the Supreme Court, blah, 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 the support act, no. Rule district copies. Do you have a link for that?
I'm sorry?
I know we have the Rules Enabling Act up on our website. I just don't know where it's at myself at the moment.
You might put it in the search.
You know, that search never works, but I'll try it.
It always works for me. It does. It brings me up about three times what I'm looking for, but it still works.
Let's see. Rules Enabling, unless I'm spelling it wrong.
Go down. Keep going down.
Oh, there's way too much. Let's try to add a little more. Let's put the
Rules
Act.
Enabling Act. Put Act on there.
Yeah, it never seems to work. Well, no, that's not it. Never seems to work for me. Okay, anyway, I should be able to find it. Here, let's see, PDF maybe, no, let's try this. Nope, that's not it. They get a lot of BS on it. People get given a lot of thoughts and, you know, trying to really,
yes.
opposed to just, I like to go right to it and read. This may be it here. Nope, that's not it either. Why can't we just find it? Anyway, I've read through that. What it is saying that if anything within the rules are in conflict with the laws of the land, ultimately, and again, I'm paraphrasing and shortening up, that's exactly what it's saying. It's ultimately a null and void. It's not saying what you think you're saying, but they, when they speak with law, they kind of put things together, you know, very strangely on the one hand, but on the other hand, sometimes that strange language gives the specific focus of what they're really focusing in on. And in this case, really, the bottom line is anything in the rules that's contrary to the Constitution or the laws of the land is null and void. But even in the act itself, I know I was looking at, I was talking about one of the codes, and there was an A and B, and that in itself was in conflict to itself. So in other words, it was contradictive. It was an oxymoron. And so anyway, the Rules Enabling Act is really horrific. It's they didn't even have the power to write it and to give someone power. You know, how can Congress create power and give it to another branch of government to give them more power? How can they do that? They can't. I mean, that in itself is the beginning of a problem.
And well, then I agree.
And then everything from there just really got worse. They literally destroyed and just shredded our Constitution with that Rules Enabling Act. There is no just courts. There are no courts of record. There are no constitution to be upheld in the courts. They deny all things. They won't give you habeas corpus. They won't give you a fair hearing. They make summary judgments by administrative law judges who have no power and authority under law. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. They control the juries. They control the grand juries. They get their ham sandwiches. They get their final results. They get their convictions. And people just tolerate it and live with it and move on. And that's a shame. You know, I listen to people complain and moan and complain and so on and so forth. And then you give them something to help fix it and they don't do nothing. I mean, it's a big problem. People complain, but they're not willing to fix the problem. That takes time and sometimes a little money, you know. I don't know. And things are getting worse because we're just getting more and more ignorant, and AI is going to make us more ignorant. These smartphones have made us more ignorant. They've desocialized us. It's destructive to our children. You know, right now, you know, at some point in time, there'll be no actors. There'll be no Hollywood. You just go in there and have AI create a movie for you and give them some, you know, ideas, and they do all the work. You want to write a book, you go talk to AI, you write a book, I want 300 pages of this, that.
Oh, I agree.
It's just total destruction of all things. And I want to tell you something. I am confused now, most recently, the past 3 months or so. I see things on the internet, you know, on YouTube, for instance, and it's like in documentary form. It doesn't say that it was created by AI. It doesn't say that it's all BS and untrue. And they put these documentaries out there, and it's all BS. It's not. It's hard to tell what the truth is anymore. It's really getting bad, and it's going to get worse. This is just the beginning of horror that's heading to, you know, the world here.
Okay. Well, I've been querying AI, and it might be interesting to read what the AI thinks because AI was trained on documents all over the internet, and so most of the documents on the internet are coming from a position of bar lawyers, and so it might give you a clue as to what you missed or how you might want to reword something.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'll send it to you. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I see one person in the queue now, so we'll try to give them a moment or two. We're at the end of our program, or a minute over, but we're 2 minutes over now. Anyway, you got the mic. We'll talk for a minute or two. Big guy, what's your first name and what's your state?
Hi, John. Richard Kennedy calling from North Dakota. Say, I just got a question on, I'm a subscriber to Telegram. I'll tell you what, I guess the doggone, I mean, there's the Trump one, there's the Josh Patel one, and they're all pitching this Trump Bitcoin stuff and XRP. And I had sent a question to one of the
members.
That's
a big error, in my opinion. That's one thing they failed on. They don't really, well, first of all, they should know or have learned the monopoly money that we have in process right now and then related to Bitcoin. Does anybody, do you have any idea what Bitcoin value was when it first came out? What was the value of a Bitcoin when they first started? Do you know? Or does anyone here know?
Less than $10.
Okay, yeah. And it's worth like what, $100,000 now or something?
Well, last I heard it was $106,000.
Okay, so a pyramid. Okay, what do they call
Ponzi
that?
Scheme. It's a Ponzi
scheme. Yeah, that's a Ponzi scheme, exactly. And, you know, there's nothing of value there. Nothing of value. And I am very...
I went around last night with somebody about this. XRP is the way it's going to go. And then they're going to go, I mean, this quantum financial system. And I mean, what the heck is the truth? I mean, what are they going to do if they get off the American dollar? Well, everybody's pushing, oh, you got to get the Vietnamese, whatever it's called, and the Iraqi...
They're not pushing to move this Bitcoin as, a legal tender, okay? It's just something that they say it's okay and so on, which is they should stay away from it because it's just nothing but a Ponzi scheme. But look, there is no...
How do you get to the truth? How do you find out what's what? No, I mean, they're saying Bondi was quoted, and Josh Patel were quoted as saying, well, to get these indictments and to actually get them served is going to take months and years.
Well, I didn't think they said years, but it takes... Look at...
No, they said years.
Hold on. Each case, okay, each case that you get involved with, now you have to dig up all the information. You got to do a lot of investigation. For each person you're going to go after, you have to do huge amounts of investigations. You got to pull together all the law, what laws they broke, blah, 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 so on and so forth. But a lot of this is going to be simplified because Trump is already talking military and he's talking other things. We've heard about that through Q, but he's actually talking it now. And so these military tribunals will move it very quickly because most of this is subversion. But a lot of this stuff has been worked on for ultimately 8 years. They've been working. There's people working behind the scenes for over 8 years that came out of first the original, the first the Trump administration. And they've been bringing together cases against individuals. And they've got, I forget what number of indictments. It's a huge, huge number of indictments across America.
Yeah.
They've already put
thousands.
Together. So it's 8 years of investigation. So a lot of work has been done on a lot of different things. All the big players' work has been done to some degree on them. But now that they got access into these different agencies and are able to dig up a lot more and get information about this, that, and other things that they haven't been able to get in, and it's a tremendous amount of work. I mean, when you think about, let's take the videos for all of this stuff with the child... slavery things. I forget the words, but in any event, the child marketing and they're selling children sexual for sex and all that stuff. Look, they got tons and tons of videos they're going through. I heard they're like 100,000 videos. So you got all these videos they're going through. They can't release it all because it's pornography to begin with. Okay, so but they still have to make cases about it, and they have to make sure that the names of the victims aren't in there, and that their faces aren't in these things, or any information that would expose these individuals. And then they got to bring it together in a way, and they'll only be able to put out as far as pictures are concerned. I think it would be very minimum, to some degree, because you don't need much to go after a person that's been involved with this stuff if you have some incriminating pictures, and. It's a lot of work that they got to go through. It really is. And saying it definitely weeks and months for sure. And some of the things may be years. I don't know. But we do know that the head of the snake is going to be taken out fast because they've already got that info. But, right now they're digging up the stuff that they couldn't get to through the agencies. And that's what a lot of these things were being spoken of. And again, a lot of the stuff is already together. As far as the investigations are concerned and the indictments, that's already sealed up and ready to go on huge numbers across America.
So, So what's it all about? It's going to take months and years before you actually get them in jail.
Oh, no, it's going to happen quick and fast. But
it may sound like just a stall tactic until they get rid of this.
No, I think what's going to take months and years is all this information being laid out to the people. Yeah, it's going to take some time. I get the impression that majority of that work's going to be done by next year, by coming around to the 4th of July of 2026. I get that impression for some of the things that were said by Trump and others. So majority of this, and we're right now at the beginning of the fallout. We're at the point when there's going to be a tsunami of information concerning people in high places and different groups of people, trading these children and other slave trading of just not just children, of others, women and so on. It's all going to come out real soon. I think the tsunami is ready to come. And it's going to be real hot this summer. That's my strong feeling.
Because well, there was something about going to happen July 4th, a monumental or whatever. But reset that you're talking about.
Did you see what Trump put out on Hillary Clinton? And all of the lists about all the murders and stuff of the people around them?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that means something's about to happen. When the President of the United States puts out video concerning these things, you know something's ready to fall. Something's ready to come down. The hammer's ready to come down.
What's true and what's fiction, and that's my question.
Again, you're going to first of all, I think you're going to get it's coming from the administration. But yeah, the enemy is going to say it's made up and this, that, and the other thing. But anything that is not real, I do believe can be seen by people who can look deep into its creation and see that, yeah, this is fake, this is phony, in opposed to something that's real. But there's lots of also evidence, there's other collaborating evidence, there's people that are coming out that's going to spill the beans on this and that. I mean, it's going to be huge, okay? But, this AI thing is going to throw a little bit of a wrench into the game. You can see that, too. But... Yeah. Again, that's something they're going to use. They're already preparing to say that. Hillary Clinton came out with a comment saying, they're saying all this stuff, they're making it up, and, but they can make you look like you're doing anything. They're already talking about AI videos as if it's something that they did, which they didn't do. And again, they're trying to really get ahead of this, but they're not going to be able to. And that's why I think a lot of these things is going to be military. And it has to be military. Why not? This is subversion against the United States of America on the highest level. This is something that the military needs to deal with. There's other things that they may not. And again, those indictments will come in and they will go through the courts. But the other thing, I think he's cleaning house. We're at the point, he's did the exposure of Congress. There's a lot of people in Congress, they're talking about a lot of people in Congress that's going to be arrested, and that would include the Senate too. These people are going to go to jail. That is actually being talked by the administration. Okay? So things are ready to really, the hammer is ready to come down. I can see it.
Well, he said he was going to put Hillary in jail, 6 years ago.
Yeah, well, yeah, I remember, you belong in jail.
No question.
It's about to come down. So. Anyway, we'll come to the end. We can talk again next week, but it's 3 minutes after. Yes. Time to go to bed.
It was a good program tonight. Good job.
Appreciate that.
Good job. Yeah.
Okay. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next Monday. And again, anybody that can help with sending something to get this these papers and books out. Again, it's going to be about $600 in mailing. So, whatever people can do, because we need the money. Otherwise, we'll wait another week before we can get it out until we can accumulate the necessary funding. All right.
Oh, did you hear about that guy from Texas that was filing against the property tax?
What
his name was? I sent it to mail it in L.A. for people to look at, but he's bringing a major lawsuit, and he's looking for his petition to get signed by anybody from any state about the fraud on the property tax that's going on, and it's pretty much nationwide.
Well, property tax is going to go away soon, too, because it's a direct tax. You can't have it.
Vaxel was his name, I think, Jerry Vaxel or something out of Texas. He's just a developer, a general contractor like you, and just got tired of all the shenanigans going on with the raising property tax, getting in conjunction with the appraisers and that to raise up values and that.
We'll talk about it next week.
I'll bring it up next week, but there was some stuff I sent to NLA on it just to kind of review it. So.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
In fact, we're going to end things. Let me end it. All right, again, good night. See you next week. Hopefully. Good night.